Check, check. Checkity check. Check. If that's your humor, share it with the world. That's the quote we're going to kick this episode of A Rig for Dirt off with. Welcome to Rig for Dirt, the podcast that brings the adventure to you. And we have come full circle from episode number one, which was here in the beautiful desert valley of Calico. And our very, very first episode, if you guys have heard it or want to go back and listen to it, was here in Calico. It was with Frank and I, and since then we've heard from new people like Eric. What's up, Eric?
Hey guys, what's going on?
Welcome back.
Thanks, buds. Happy to be back.
What do you think about Calico?
I like it out here.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, perfect shoulder season weather.
It's really nice out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Low wind. Good crowds.
I think we've had I think we've had the other person who's actually on tonight on very briefly before. I think it was at a Rigs and Brews event, right? Exactly. At one of Michelle's events, but we got Jimmy.
Hey, hey, hey.
Introduce yourself, bud.
Hey, I'm just, you know, one of many people that that have found great value in exploring the outdoors.
First and last name would have been fine.
I like to tie it in. I like to give, it's not about me, it's about everybody.
But, answer the question.
But, well, let me get back to it. Just hear me out.
Did you want this,
by the way? Yeah, I'll take it.
Hey, long,
now my name is it. My name is Jimmy Shaw.
Long format
Jimmy
answers.
Shaw.
My name is
okay.
Jimmy Shaw. I go by Jay Shaw, Romar X.
Yeah.
I have been one of many proponents of travel and getting outdoors, and I love sharing my journeys with people. I love capturing the camaraderie. And
dude, you're a great photographer.
Thank you.
I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
I saw some of your photos from tonight. I think they're just from the cell phone.
Mm-hmm. Dude, it's all about the eye. It doesn't matter what the tool is.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what I was going to say. And even with the cell phone, you were able to capture the moment.
Right.
It was nice.
I think that's what I've always appreciated about Jimmy's photography is he always catches like a cool moment.
Yeah.
Just, or his post is really nice too when he does post work. Yeah.
Appreciate it. Yeah. It's, I love it. You know, I've grown up just a visual person and I really do enjoy being inspired by other people. And I grew up watching Nat Geo. I loved going outdoors, exploring, capturing landscapes. And then I would follow like the greatest landscape photographers out there and just really
like
appreciate
actually, like,
their work.
Get
it's inspiring
by what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, it was so, always my dream to kind of recreate that in the best way I could. And then
did you go to school for it?
I took one class in high school.
Okay. I took a class in college.
Okay.
Yeah.
You do film?
Yeah, we did film exposures and stuff, and dark it was really cool. And it's cool to see that side of it where you understand, like, okay, dodging and burning, what that really is, like, when you're under, like, a lamp and you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But the digital thing just fucking kicks everything in the nuts. Like, you could take a billion photos and then find which one actually works well.
Mm-hmm. It's a double-edged sword, though.
It is, yeah, for sure. I mean, you don't want to spend a lot of time in post, right?
Right.
I mean, Eric, you're a fucking bitchin' ass photographer too. Like, what's your style? Like, shoot just what you need to shoot, or do you shoot a few and then go back in post and like figure it out?
I never really did film photography, but
even with digital,
even being from the digital age, I'm exactly where you just said. I'd rather not fix it in post.
Yeah,
like
mm-hmm.
I shoot in manual, and yeah, depth of field, ISO, white balance, aperture, and frame rate. Like, you have four things to check before every shot. Like, check them quickly.
Yeah.
You get used to it quickly. Read a histogram. And then
sounds like a little bit more than four things, but yeah.
But I mean, yeah. But you get used to it pretty quickly. I'm like,
I mean, if you
what
got,
your lenses do. And
yeah.
Then,
it becomes second nature.
But your shot earlier was silhouetted. The one that I referenced where I'm like, you captured the moment. We were like out on the shooting range and he got a great shot of like a silhouette of like someone laying prone with a, with a rifle.
Yeah.
And it was like mountain range in the background. It was a, kind of a complex shot because of how many, like with silhouettes, you only have like a two dimensional field. And then you still have to like adjust the light quickly. And I think cell phones help with that because like you can just kind of like see the image and capture it. And with photography on, I haven't done like full frame digitals, but DSLRs, like it through the lens isn't exactly what it looks like.
Right.
When you're capturing the image, it's not like a full digital representation. So you do need to have some form of control, but
you know what? I think it's a very relevant topic. Everybody who likes to get outdoors, it seems like, you know, 3 out of 4 people have cameras.
Yeah. Well, everyone's got a camera in their pocket.
Everyone's got a good camera. Anything better than an iPhone 10 is legitimate. You know,
it's so crazy.
Everything from 15 years ago had enough megapixels to be printed and enhanced and enlarged. But it really comes down to, like you said, the eye. You know, knowing, taking the time to study like both tradition as well as innovation in the photo world, and then adding your touch to it. Take what others have done, what's successful, and then modify it to you and your personality.
Yeah.
And compose a shot that...
Get the fundamentals down and then go after the...
Yes, the fundamentals you have to... It has to be second nature. Like all of the things that you listed, you have to check it before each photo. Especially when it comes down to like action,
shutter speed is more like video, but same shit.
But
well, it depends if you want to capture movement or not.
Yeah,
it depends on the intent of the which you know. In your mind.
If you're doing vehicle photography and the vehicle's like shooting like still, like obviously high frame rate, get a crisp photo.
Yeah.
But like if you want to capture movement, like slow the frame rate down, like allow like
the shutter speed and
allow the tires to be moving, allow
drag the light.
Track the subject.
You're basically stopping time and then your shutter speed is the speed at which you slow it.
We're photographers, time stoppers. Yeah, we're the only people that have control over time itself.
You could freeze time in a fucking millisecond, or you can freeze time through the course of, you know, the shutter being open and getting some more input. And then you get a two-dimensional 3D image, right? Like you get this movement that happens within the photo.
Right.
And yeah, like racing, the best. Fucking the taillights at like Nürburgring or fucking some track that's just bitching. And you see the lights zigzag as they go through the corners. It's beautiful.
Yeah, well, I dig it. Like you can see the motion. You have clarity in certain parts of the image, and you have like movement in other parts.
Yeah,
and with things like KOH racing or like
and
that's something with like vehicle photography. Like,
and there's like different techniques even in motion blur. Like if you're tracking, if you got a side shot of a trophy truck passing by you high speed, right? You want to lock onto the truck, get it in focus, and have everything else blurring out to show the rate of speed at which he's moving, right? But some of the best photographers, I don't even know how they do it. Instead of the basic techniques is to get everything in focus of the truck and then show the movement. However, there's some guys who are able to artistically get the most important aspect that they select on the truck, whether it be a number, whether it be the driver's face, and then artistically blur the rest of it. And then show the movement as well. And there's
an example of
breaking tradition.
Like in post?
It could be post technique. Yeah. I think the best guys are doing it out of camera.
In film?
In film. Just out there.
They're doing it in film, not even like digital probably.
I'm more referring to digital, but honestly.
Oh, really? Like layering the exposure on digital?
On digital, yeah.
In camera?
In camera.
Huh.
Do you think anyone still shoots film?
Everyone or anyone?
Anyone. He's,
I mean,
for
anything like professional like that, like it's expected to be uploaded so fast in this day and age.
Mm-hmm.
Like you take the image and like first one to upload from a race is the one to get published.
Yeah.
And so
I swear to God, my 5D Mark II was like film. I mean, it was full digital, but
yeah,
that camera was such a dinosaur and such a high quality dinosaur.
I didn't even talk about that one.
Dude, I was shooting fashion with the 5D Mark II. Your glass was the only like limiting factor. The resolution was good enough for print,
yep.
Like you're saying.
It was like 12 megapixels, but that was enough.
Yeah, that's good. Right? I don't know, whatever it was fine. Yeah. And the images were amazing. And yeah, like everything was digital. So you were able to like pull it into your computer. Mm-hmm. And we had a workstation. As I was shooting, the photos were uploading directly.
Mm-hmm.
And so you would see it in Lightroom. Mm-hmm. I used Lightroom as my tether.
Mm-hmm.
So the camera was tethered off of that app. Everything would load up in Lightroom, and then you could actually preset your edits for each photo. Like you kind of take the first couple, then you're like, okay, well, here's the treatment I want to give it.
Mm-hmm.
And then every single subsequent photo would have that treatment already applied to it. Yeah, so fast.
Copy and paste. Like,
I mean, back in the day, you had photo studios inside of like publishing places where they would develop the film in-house,
mm-hmm.
and get it out as quick as they could, right?
1 hour photo.
I used to work at one of those spots. You had to watch out for like
checking out tourist
in
film
compromised
roles.
Situations
uh-huh.
in camera. And if you saw it, you had to call the police. I called the police
you
once.
Had to report it.
Really?
Yeah.
You did not.
I did
no
too.
Bullshit.
Yeah. No bullshit.
Wow.
And it's like, this does not look right. And they looked at it, and then the investigation got taken over by the managers of the Moto Photo spot and the police, but. Yeah, like you would see some shit and you're like, sometimes it'd be like some old naked lady fucking posing for a dude and you'd be like developing that film.
Right.
And
right.
You had no choice in the matter. You just had to develop it. You had to see every photo. Color correct.
Sounds like you can't unsee them.
You can't unsee them.
You can't unsee
and
them.
And then, you know, you move on.
I think he is.
The best part of that job was the fact that my direct boss was the biggest pothead I'd ever known. And he took $20 out of the till and then forgot to put it back, got busted, tried to pin it on me, which, I mean, he didn't try, he did. And it was all on him.
That's
but it
crazy.
Was one of my favorite jobs that I had. I used to play like hardcore fucking records
mm-hmm.
on the record player. And there was part of me that kind of felt bad when people would walk in. I'm like, they don't understand this music. But
did
it was
you
still
say
like,
record player?
Yeah. It was still blasting. And, yeah, I'd bring
You're
my records in.
You're age dating yourself with a record player.
I'd bring my records in, dude.
Did you like...
You still have records?
Drop uh-huh. the needle on the record player and...
I don't know if I have any more records left.
You have records.
I think we got rid of all our boxes that had records.
Okay.
They're all gone. But I had my own little DJ set. And I would bring my hardcore records I'd bring in. And I think that's why ultimately they actually got rid of me was because... They wanted this dude who was like blasting music at Moto Photo, having the time of his life developing pictures.
Keeping like, the vibe going out. On his own accord.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Moto Photo vibe is Moto Photo. Strong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What kind of music was he blasting? It was like.
Yeah. But like hardcore. Yeah. It was like.
Oof. That's the high end. Yep. Zombie standing, bobbing their heads. Mm-hmm.
And they're like, we got to get this dude out of here.
Yeah, nah.
It's okay. We all go through phases. I went through my techno hardcore phase. Yeah.
What was the most memorable part of that phase?
The most memorable part of the party?
Your techno hardcore
scene?
Phase, yeah.
I think was the moment that I decided that I wanted something else for myself, and I left it all behind was the most memorable part. Otherwise... The entire time was like a blur. Yeah. I mean, granted, I think to this day, my eclectic love of music has been spawned from like that time. But there's nothing good that ever came from doing all the shit that we were doing during that time. Straight up.
Right.
Yeah.
There was usually no vision.
Dude, quite a few people actually from that time like are dead.
Yeah.
And Yeah. And then there's a lot that you hear about that are just still lost, just kind of like roaming out there. And
did they techno too hard?
They technoed way too hard, bro. Yeah.
Don't take techno too seriously, people.
Mm-hmm. You can't take anything too seriously.
That's a good point.
What was that quote that you said?
Don't quote me.
Question everything, but don't be... I don't remember.
Question but everything, hey, don't be an quotes. Idiot.
Yeah, it could be. So, what do you guys think about Calico?
I dig it out here. I mean, this time of year, it's freaking perfect.
It was.
I don't think we should share. I think it's so perfect. I don't even think we should share what time of year we're actually here.
Yeah.
No, like, we may. I mean, I don't think we're doing this live. Are we even doing this live?
We are, actually. Yeah. I don't lie.
People will hear about it.
I think, just a few days ago, we had some of the worst rain that SoCal's seen.
It was a good storm, yeah.
This whole last 2 months. And so you timed the trip perfectly, and we had 72 degrees, sunny today.
The yearly forecast said that there was going to be rain on this weekend, but I'm like, okay, if the yearly forecast says there's going to be rain, I can almost guarantee it's going to be like a nice chill day. And sure enough, here we are. And the storm was supposed to come on Monday, and I don't even know if it's coming, but yeah.
Conditions are nice. The skies are clear. You can see for miles. There's no dust being kicked up.
Crazy ass moon tonight too.
The moon is throwing out the weirdest,
the gnarliest ring around the moon
I've ever seen. It is thick with two C's.
So guys, right now it is. What time is it?
Two C's.
What time is it right now?
It's thicker than a.
It is like it's almost 11 o'clock tonight. Oh yeah, 10:57, and. We're chilling by the fire. The fire's going. It's hot. Warm fire.
Oh, it's nice.
The desert is clear. It's been raining recently, so the dust is really low. There's not a lot of dust going on. You can see from miles, like Jimmy was saying, there's only a little bit of cloud coverage, but otherwise you can see some stars. There is a ring around the moon right now, and the weather... It's a little chilly, but it's totally tolerable, and it's been a good time.
It's been a damn good time. Like,
it's amazing.
We ate so good tonight, too.
We ate great today.
Good little potluck dinner.
What did we do before that? Time. We went to Calico?
Yeah, a little time at Calico Ghost Town.
How'd you like that? Was that your first time?
Great suggestion.
You've never been there before?
Not in the manner in which we explored. I think I was in the parking lot. I didn't have more than 15 minutes.
Like you said,
it was
like 7 years ago.
Yeah. No, this was a great experience.
Eric, was that your first time?
Yeah, it was my first time like actually exploring. I'd been through the area before, but I never like stopped to go check out what was up there. And it's worth a visit. It's cool. It's definitely got like an authentic feel to it.
Yeah. You're gonna wait a while for your beer, but it's worth it.
Yeah.
I think they're just a little bit understaffed this time of year.
but they do have beer, so.
But they do have beer. And it is strong, and it's a good price.
They had this whiskey barrel shit that was like 11%.
Oh my goodness!
It was tasty. It was good. It went down easy. It didn't taste like a dark beer, but it was dark.
Right.
They had a bock that was like a dark bock, and it was like black.
Yeah,
but it drank like a light beer.
It drank like a light beer, and it was also 11. It was like 10.8%.
IPA. They had a pale. They had like they kind of covered the bases on like what you could want.
Yeah.
Except when my wife asked for the red Cabernet, she got Stella instead, and that was not quite the same thing. Yeah, but
so stick with the beer.
Yeah.
When you're at Calico,
stick with the beer.
Stick with the beer.
The wine might be coming from a box. It's probably coming from a box, let's be honest.
You know, these days, box wine, you could actually find probably something decent.
Trader Joe's.
Yeah.
That's what Kelly got.
Love him.
Kelly, who was taking a nap, who's still out, by the way. Kelly would have been on this podcast if she didn't decide to go crash.
Anyone who says they're taking a nap past 10 o'clock at night
is taking a sleep.
Is probably taking a long nap. Yeah. Maybe until like 7 a.m.
Until the light comes again.
Maybe until dawn. But whatever. Yeah. I like a long nap. I'm just resting my eyes.
This
is going to rest my morning eyes sun for the next like, 7 hours, eight hours.
Oh, yeah.
It's all good.
She took the dog, too, and the chair. I was like, oh, yeah, that's going to be a good nap.
Whose chair? What chair?
Oh, oh I am
Kelly.
Sitting.
You're sitting in Kelly's chair.
I'm sitting in her chair. I'm just holding it down. Make sure it's warm for her if she gets back. Right. Her chair is more comfortable than mine.
So in Calico, you could go down this road called Mule Canyon Road, and it'll take you into a canyon area where there's a lot of little campsites. And
I thought you were going to say mules.
Mule Canyon
Road. So disappointed right now.
There might be mules out here. There could
fucking
be.
Huge letdown right there.
Like, did you hear about the Riverside mules? The mules that were like converging upon Riverside County and like running amok?
No.
Yeah. Yeah. That happened.
Can you tell us more about this?
I don't know. They were just like wild donkeys.
Did they just drop out of the sky?
Wild donkeys just came out of wherever they came from and started hanging out in Riverside.
Come from Arizona. Close the border.
Huh?
The Arizona.
Arizona donkeys?
The donkeys are coming over. They're crossing.
You want to close the border between California and Arizona?
Maybe not.
For the donkeys.
Don't let the jackasses in.
Yeah, don't let the jackasses.
We're talking about donkeys.
Burros.
Burros.
Wild animals, people.
Don't let the jackasses in. It's a good country. I like this country. The best country.
Don't get canceled.
If I had a country, it would be this country right here.
It's the best. So many freedoms.
I think we have, I mean, we had a moment today where we were like, you know what? We're just out on the land, hanging out, camped, no reservations. We could cook what we want to cook. We have money to buy the food that we're cooking. Mm-hmm. We're able to enjoy ourselves, have drink, have food, have the time off. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a pretty fucking good life, dude. You know?
I had fun today with you guys. This is the days that make life worth living, honestly.
Whatever I can do to keep you here.
It doesn't need to be complicated. Just
another
being
day longer.
Out, just being out with friends.
That is deep.
Yeah.
Doesn't need to be complicated, but
no.
That energy, I feel it. I feel it.
Hanging out with friends, mm-hmm. cooking good food.
I love hanging out with friends.
Cooking good food. Can we talk about that?
Out in the
beautiful Yeah,
wilderness.
Let's talk about the food. Jimmy, what did you cook today?
Oh, my goodness. I don't know if it has an official name. However, in Mexico, you can often find these food stands that essentially have some of the world's best chefs in there cooking directly over charcoal.
Mm-hmm.
You cook all kind of things, but the dish I was inspired to make was essentially two ingredients, pasillo, chili peppers,
mm-hmm.
and I couldn't find authentic Manchego cheese, so we went with Monterey Jack.
Oh, those bricks that you guys had cut up? Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. Big old bricks. Chop them up, shove them in the cheese, throw them directly on the charcoal, let them get nice and black, and you steam them, and I just threw them in a Ziploc because I'm economical and we're camping. But let it steam in there for like 10 minutes, strip off the char, and say like 90% of it, and chop them up, sear them on the cast iron
with the cheese
and then you got yourself a nice take a tortilla, warm it up, you got a nice handful of
you had some like carnitas or
had some
carne asada
ranchero. Yep.
Okay.
And
that's good, dude.
It's just to make a good meal, it isn't about how much seasoning you use all the time, it's just about technique and dedication and being able to make some mistakes too. You may cook something a little bit too long, but sometimes it adds to the flavor in a good way.
The good thing about camp is everyone's been drinking, so you're probably getting away with
everybody's probably
some minor mistakes.
Yeah,
Matt's here too. Matt, can you, Jimmy?
Hi.
Can you pass?
Hi.
Grab it. Come here. Get over here.
Good. Hi.
What'd you make?
Brats.
The brats were good.
The brats.
How did you cook your brats? Because they were different brats than I've.
The champagne of beers. Boil them in the champagne
Miller?
Of beers.
The Miller High Life? Little Miller High Life boiled brats?
Good old boiled brats. How much can you boil?
shouldn't have pulled too much.
How dare you disrespect the fucking
boss? Ali, you had the classic chicken.
Yeah, it's like my go-to, and everybody likes it.
It is. It was,
and there's nothing wrong with it. So keep it going.
I just like the fact that you used actual techniques to cook it. Digging a hole in the ground.
Oh, sure.
Lining. Yeah. I mean, it's very simple. You may think nothing of it, but, you know, in our gear-focused day and age with what we do out here, people often don't resort to more simple cooking techniques.
Yeah, I just wish I had the coals that we have right now on the fire.
Yeah, they finally developed.
These are perfect. Yeah. Yep. I had to keep feeding my coals with new coals, but eventually we had the chicken cooked. And so it's like, yeah, it's the shallot yogurt. It's a chicken. It's like it's finely chopped cucumber, mm-hmm. a little squish of lemon juice, and it is something delicious. Wrapped up in some lavash bread, like Persian burritos.
Persian burritos.
Yeah, but
how did you heat the bread?
Oh, just on the scuttle.
Okay, okay. Yeah.
I just leave the scuttle on, and then I keep flipping the bread over and over.
Yeah.
Until it just all gets warm.
Yeah. That's perfect, because the bread's huge, and the scuttle is like the perfect size to just keep it.
Yeah, you just kind of keep it going. It's always going to get hotter in the middle, but the scuttle is such a great tool to use. I mean,
oh, yeah.
I bought my scuttle. Like, you know, it's funny because Eric has always had a scuttle, or, you know, other people that I've gone camping with have always had a scuttle.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, all right, we'll just use their scuttle. And then it finally, the opportunity came up where I'm like, you know what, I'm just going to buy it. And I hit them up, and I actually ended up getting one of their... Eric thinks it's one of their old school made in USA pans, but whatever.
I think
it
they're
is,
always made in the USA, but at a certain point, they got
this one was stamped hard.
Yeah, they got their own die set up. I think yours is from their original run of product. And
yeah.
It's one of the older ones.
Oh, nice.
Like you can see the made in USA stamped through the pan. And yeah, I mean, you cook breakfast, lunch, and dinner on your scuttle. Easy. And dessert.
Easy to clean, easy to pack with.
Lightweight, lightweight, relatively.
I mean, go follow Marco Overland X, mm-hmm. and you will find a plethora of recipes utilizing the scuttle.
Yeah.
That being said, like, I appreciate cooking over the coals. I appreciate different methods. When I go out,
mm-hmm.
I like to think about, like, okay, what meals do I want to cook?
Yep.
And it's usually, like, I mean... Unfortunately, it's due to California fire regulations.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like to cook with cast iron and foil.
Okay.
It's fun going out camping and cooking with, like, the absolute bare minimum.
Yeah.
Of,
and
like,
making.
Yeah, and making it work.
Yeah. Not only surviving,
there's
but,
a,
like.
There's a lot you can do with just cast iron and foil. Like, it's.
Have you ever set up one of those, what is it, the tripod with, like. Like the chain you could lower your meat into the fire.
Oh, like on top of the fire?
Yeah, I know those have a name.
I've never done it with just straight meat, but I've done it with like.
I camper made one.
With a kettle.
Yeah, they made one with like almost like a scuttle.
Almost a scuttle style, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to happen. Somebody's going to come and like see something that's successful and working well.
Yeah.
And want to capitalize on that, you know, energy and momentum. But mm-hmm. there's always going to be one Tembotet scuttle.
The original. It set the trend. It started the wheels in motion.
I mean, I just love supporting the people who really, like, kick it off.
Yeah.
Like, Jerry, what Jerry's done with Brian, like, the little empire that they're building on this pan, on this very unique pan that they pulled out of, what, South Africa?
Yeah, I believe so. I think it was like a South African...
Like a plow disc.
Yeah.
Yeah.
South
yeah.
African farm equipment. Yeah. And turned into easy way to prepare a meal.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've ever gotten the opportunity to hang out with Jerry, the stories that he has...
Jerry's great.
Yeah, and he goes to like all the events, and he goes to everything... He's so
he
passionate.
Literally
he's
goes,
not a caterer.
Yeah.
He will tell you he's not a caterer, but I've had him feed quite a few people. Over 100-something people I've had him feed.
You know,
smile.
Jerry's a unique individual. He I actually am not a customer of Tembo Tusk. However, I have seen him at nearly every event that I've been to for the last X amount of years, like at least 5 years.
Tabata's one of those things dedicated where like your friends got one.
Right.
Usually, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But he's just dedicated to the community. Yeah, I've only been to Overland Expo East once this past year.
He's at Desert Rendezvous.
Right now. He was out there.
Yeah. Yeah. He's at Desert Rendezvous right now. Yeah. He would have been here. But Desert Rendezvous, you can't fuck with the American Adventurist events. Like, they throw...
They're good.
An amazing event. Me and you hung out at one of those.
Yeah, that's around where we met.
At the Boy Scout camp.
Right, right, yeah. Off of, the 330?
I think we met at the cleanup.
The cleanup before.
I don't really actually quite remember where I met you first, Jimmy.
Was it the Joshua Tree cleanup?
So, just to let everyone here know, Jimmy's been an in-and-out friend for a while now.
Yep.
Like, we've hung out here and there. We see each other at a lot of events.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the social stuff. We're in the like same circles or sharing the same kind of like content or liking the same kind of stuff. And Jimmy's always had a really like mellow, chill approach. And I think I'm drawn to you because as a minority, and now we're getting to that, as a minority, mm-hmm. like Persian, who I didn't really have like the Persian culture, and then I didn't really have the American culture because I was kind of in between cultures, right? And I was mm-hmm. born in England, so like, fuck, I'm a fucking melting pot of all kinds of shit. But when I see other minorities enter into like this off-road camping, like vehicle-based camping kind of space, it's mm-hmm. cool. But I mean, we also kind of got to recognize the fact that there is a very predominant like culture that isn't as inclusive. I mean, it's inclusive, but it just doesn't like the, what did Frank call it? Frank called it the adjacent possible.
Right.
Like people of minority groups don't quite understand that there's this whole overland thing or, mm-hmm. you know, and I would post pictures of like making some Persian like burritos
mm-hmm.
and I would get like four or five Persian dudes out of nowhere who like follow my account that I didn't even know they did. Mm. Like hit me up and be like, dude, you're bringing our culture to these people. Like, it's mm-hmm. awesome. And I'm like, whoa. I didn't realize I was like bringing anything to anyone, but like, cool. And they were like so excited and like stoked on it.
They're like, you're an ambassador for us. Like,
yeah, you're an ambassador.
Into this foreign space.
I'm like, I speak the language and that's kind of where the line gets drawn. but as far as being like, you know, for you, like however you identify, African American, mm-hmm. black, like mm-hmm. whatever, like, you know, I know Mike Houston from Shower Pouch. Mm-hmm. Like, I wish he was here. I should have had Mike come out to our Calico trip. I just wasn't top of mind. And I have invited him to other shit, but you know.
You know what? There may be a trip with him. I don't know what you're doing in the next few weeks, but he's trying to go to a really cool local mountaintop.
Probably nothing. Like, I'm probably not going to be doing anything like that.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of shit to fix at home the Jeep and whatnot. And I'm kind of in build mode right now, but...
We'll link up. We'll
connect.
Have you ever done... Just this is a tangent to what we're going to talk about, but have you done Mojave Road?
Yeah, yeah.
So he loves doing Mojave Road. He loves doing Death Valley. And Mojave we're trying to do bitching. One of those soon. Next couple of months.
So our buddy Adam Lighty, he's...
Mojave Road's where Ali and I... First hung out.
Was it really? No.
Yeah, for sure.
No, it was Mojave. Oh, did you say Mojave or did you say Death Valley?
Mojave Road.
Oh, yeah, Mojave Road. Yeah.
Mojave Road.
We saw it snow in the desert.
No way.
Yeah, dude. And Eric was saying, like, bro, if it snows, and you see the snow.
Tufts of snow on cactuses will blow your mind. Be one of my favorite things.
It'll blow your mind is what Eric said.
I love camping in the desert and getting snow. And seeing cacti with, like, snow on them is one of those otherworldly things that I've gotten to see probably
three times
in my life. Your brain
doesn't quite understand what it's looking at.
It's just, it's cool. And I called it that it was going to happen that night.
I've seen
it.
Like,
it did?
And it certainly did.
4 or 5 inches. Like, Josh Soul's kid was, like, rolling the biggest fucking snowball around camp. Like, the thing was, like,
that's
2 feet tall.
Where were you at? Which part of the desert?
The New York Mountains up in the Mojave.
We were up at Camp Fallis.
Cap phallus, yeah. Called
it's called that because there's a rock shaped like a phallus.
A penis.
Yeah, it's a gigantic penis shaped rock.
Cock
look
rock.
It up.
Cock the cock rock.
Yeah.
Thanks to Matt. Matt always has the
the right words for the moment.
Cock rock?
Cock rock.
It's not wrong. Cock
rock. It's not wrong.
It's not a bad description.
Pretty fucking accurate.
Yeah. Sounds about right.
Are we out of firewood?
One more bundle?
Is there? Are there any bundles holding down his tent canopy?
Oh, there's awning? One tied to the...
The awning. There's one. We've got two tied there's to the awning. There.
Just one left.
Oh, there's one left on the awning? Yep. Fuck. We did not come prepared. We need to go forage for wood.
I'm actually surprised how fast we went through. How many were there?
Well, it gets cold in the desert.
Eight. Today?
Fire doesn't suck.
Fire does not suck.
No. And start burning boxes.
Got like a little ammo can propane pit if you We'll look desperate.
Everybody get your cans.
Yeah, we'll just huddle together.
Throw an ammo can in there and just let the shots pop off.
In the last year, yeah. I love seeing the rise of the propane fire pits. Like, it's been this movement.
Did you? There's this new brand that came out.
Howl, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
How'd I know what you were about to say?
Yeah, like, it's
pretty bitching.
You don't even need to talk.
Because it gets
there's
hot.
This new
it
brand. Yeah. Bam. Like, it's made such an impact on the propane fire pit world.
Yeah, they're definitely getting out there in all the right places.
Do you know how it works?
It almost has like a, like it gets hot inside,
yeah,
and it radiates heat,
yeah,
and then the fire comes out the top. It's like it's almost like a set of headers.
Yeah, it glows like them, like red and everything. Yeah, it's like, that's smart. Just re-radiate that heat because it mimics the coals, right?
Is that what it does?
Yeah. Without coals, these flames really won't be putting out that much heat.
That much heat.
Yeah.
But it's the coals that we get. Like
it's the
I mean, that's what we cook over.
And then rocks that surround the coals and just a lot of
protein. As long as they don't explode.
Because
we did have that happen.
Yeah. We witnessed or a couple people felt
I had something brush against my cheek after this bang. And it turns out that we had a rock explode in the fire pit. And normally rocks... within any fire pit would be like lava rocks, things that are actually like tempered for that heat, like river rocks, the rocks at camp. You usually don't want those in your fire because they have a tendency to trap moisture within themselves or within their cracks.
They're porous.
And then once that moisture gets to a certain temperature, I mean, the steam wants to go just the least path of resistance. And if it gets backed up, it's going to explode.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to pop. Mm-hmm. That's what happens.
Like, science.
Is that science?
Science. Is there maybe maths? I'm not sure.
Maths in there.
There's maths.
Well, it's nice, dude. I mean, I'm glad. I'm glad we came.
Yeah.
I'm glad you guys came out.
Yeah.
I just wanted to hang out with some friends and have a little weekend getaway locally. It's fairly close to LA, Orange County. You're looking at a couple hours of driving, but once you get up here, it's not the most remote, and you could get a more remote spot in the canyon, in Mule Canyon.
Mm-hmm.
But we tend to just chill on the BLM side of things because it's mellow.
It's mellow. I think the timing was great. The weather was great. Everything's great. Today was great. This fire is great. The food is great. People are great.
Yeah.
There's zero complaints.
So how did you get into this? Did your father raise you with like camping and getting outdoors?
Yeah, so that's a good question. That I I used to talk about that just around people. We used to go camping as kids, me and my two younger brothers. Our parents were both workaholics. They're both, you know, they're both doctors.
Trying to make a life for you guys.
Yeah, they wanted to set us up with a good foundation. So we were part of this, like, this actually mostly black, ran by black woman travel club that basically went around once a quarter, and we went camping. We would all jump on a bus. You know, we packed for about 4 days, 3 or 4 days.
More through, like, this group?
Right, yeah. And it was a group of people mostly in, like, the Inglewood, Baldwin Hills area.
Okay.
South L.A.,
the areas that normally don't get the access to those types of recreation opportunities.
Right. Because just a lot of times the culture is focused on different things.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's, but yeah, so we got exposed at a young age, and then, you know, school happens. You kind of go through trying different things, trying to find your path in life.
But you can always come back to that one experience you had
yeah.
outdoors, right?
Yeah, and I came back to it not with anything to do with my family anymore at that point. This was now past high school. You know, I graduated high school, got into college, and my second year of college, I started experimenting with photography again. I had in my mind when I was graduating high school the class that I took, the photography, the film class. So at some point, I knew I wanted to get back into it digitally. So it took a couple years for me to save up to get the camera that I wanted to get. And so I got into photography and started the landscape because I was like, I was so inspired by a lot of the stuff I'd see on Discovery and Nat Geo and all that stuff. I was like, I love nature. I love going out. It reminds me of my childhood, right? And so I started by landscape photography, just going out. I had my first car still, which was a 95 4Runner.
Okay.
And so that thing took me quite a few places until the transmission crapped out, the auto, the slush box. But so then I got into another car. I got a Subaru Forester, 2004. It was modified. And so that's where the fork in the road started. I was only landscape focused until I got my Subaru. Then I got into cars.
So a lot of your outdoor shit is based off of the photography you were doing?
Right.
Okay.
Right. That's what kicked it off. And then I got into vehicles. Went down the tuner car world for several years. And that was inspired by my college courses. I was in the Formula SAE team. We built like open wheel formula style autocross vehicles.
Oh,
competed against universities. Five schools.
Did you get to drive?
Yeah, I was an endurance driver. Drove
no
an auto
way.
Club Speedway. This was in 2011.
That's right.
Yeah, a Formula Eagle car for with Cal State LA.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh,
it was a cool program.
Like so much fun.
Oh my God. I'm like, you know, a couple of my best buddies were with me in that program. To this day, I hang out with them, you know.
Yeah.
We do outdoor stuff, actually, you know. He's in the power sports world. Okay. Quads, ATVs. But, no, man, I just, I got into cars after, when it hit the tuner car scene.
Yep.
Went down the Subaru rabbit hole of modifications. Yeah. And then found out, oh, you can also lift Subarus. Because I was so tired of my second Forester being too low.
Okay.
And it was a SEMA car, so I was too cautious about it. So then it started hindering me from going the places I wanted to go.
Just having fun with it.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, all right, you know, at this point, I want to go explore more. I want to start going off-road. I was inspired by Travis, an old buddy of mine. Back in 2014, he had a 2004 Subaru WRX World Rally Blue, the classic color.
The yellow.
Yeah,
logo on the side.
With that same color, and then he had a Tapui, the OG, original Tapui square, like 4 foot by 4 foot roof up to on
all
it.
All right,
lifted it, had Rally Tech wheels, white Rally style wheels, chopped front bumper, and he would just go places and post his journeys on Instagram.
Okay,
and I think he's been off Instagram for years and years and years, but
off,
yeah, like yeah. he had like 14,000, 15,000 followers back in like 2015, 2016. But that was my drive to take my Subaru and lift the third Forester I got. I replaced the second with lift that, then really start hitting trails. And so I learned my off-roading by soft-roading.
Okay.
Learning to pick lines and all that stuff, and then just trying to capture the journey. And years later, I just kind of started tagging brands in my photos and, you know, tagging people, friends, capturing journeys and trips, events.
So when I first met you, who were you working for?
I was working for a company in the restaurant industry that sells chemicals.
No,
and
like you were working for something that had to do with our industry.
For?
I think you were doing something for. I mean, so you've been with Black Series Campers.
Yeah.
You've been with Overland Coffee Company.
Mm-hmm.
Who else?
That's really it in the industry.
Has it been Overland Coffee? Is that like what I'm thinking of?
Potentially. Maybe. I started really working with Overland Coffee more officially about 2 years ago.
Okay.
Before that, I was sort of ambassador. Angel, the owner, founder, he's an awesome guy. I would see him at expos every year. Mm-hmm. Kind of like this. I met him the same expo I met Mike Shower Pouch. 2019 Overland Expo West.
Were you doing anything with Mike at Shower Pouch?
At the time then.
Were you helping at all? No.
2 years ago, helped his booth. No, 3 years ago. The year before I started with Overland
Coffee. Maybe I was thinking Shower Pouch.
Yeah,
Overland Coffee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he hired me for Expo West, I think 2021.
Okay.
And then now she's the new employee for shows for him.
Oh, for Shower Pouch? Really?
Yeah. Haley is. But
and that's your girlfriend.
Yeah, yeah, my girlfriend. I got her hired for trade shows and gigs. She enjoys it though. She's also in the industry.
Do you have to use the shower pouch like for photos? Like, do you have to like shower with the pouch? Yeah.
I don't have to. I choose to.
She chooses.
She said she chooses to.
That's cool.
Freedom of choice.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the shower pouch is a way to do that. I love the cucumber. That's like my favorite.
Like cucumber?
I like the cucumber.
Ooh, yeah. I don't know, man. I'm bamboo all day. Nice.
Cucumber makes me feel like I'm at a resort. Like I'm going to go get a spa treatment, massage.
Bamboo all day.
Bamboo all day.
Okay. I got to try that one. That's a new one for me.
Bamboo?
Try bamboo.
I've tried citrus. I like that.
What does bamboo good. Smell like?
I like citrus.
Oh, it's so fresh. It's bamboo? So... It's like cucumber, but better.
Oh, bamboo is.
Bamboo is.
Really?
Yeah. The citrus is like a furniture polish. And it's nice. It's the smell of clean. Well, the furniture.
She's talking about the bits.
She's talking about the bits.
What are you up to now?
I became freelance a couple months ago.
So for photography and stuff? Photography, where can people find you?
My Instagram handle is RoamRx.
Okay.
RoamRx. I also am a brewer for Overland Coffee. We are at many of the local events and shows around SoCal. Yep. Every now and then we stretch our legs to go out to Overland Expos. This year we have...
I still have some of your Insta bags in my on my shelf right now. I see it sometimes.
Yeah.
I look over.
You like them?
They're good. No, it's fine. Yeah.
Hell yeah. I'll get you some more.
Coffee? Get you some coffee. Beans. Coffee, you know, to me, as long as it's got caffeine in it, I'm good.
Yeah.
As long as it's got alcohol in it, I'm good. Like, just have the stuff that I want in it. And I'm good. It doesn't have to be the best. It doesn't have to be the worst.
Yeah.
Like, as long as I can drink it.
Yeah. I'm a coffee snob.
Are you? You're coffee a coffee snob.
Yeah.
Where do you like to get your coffee from?
How do you brew your coffee, bud?
I like pour overs.
Okay.
Single origin, drizzle of honey.
Pooped out of some cat's butt. Have you had that coffee?
Cats?
I have not had
monkeys. It's also
monkeys. Is it monkeys or monkeys?
Oh, it's both. There's like two different countries.
Cats, right? Yeah.
I like a light roast. Don't burn it.
Don't burn it or shit on it.
Don't burn it.
Yeah.
Don't shit on
What's
it.
What's your favorite light roast?
Where I'm at in Carlsbad, there's a like small San Diego chain called Bird Rock.
And
pretty much everything they do, I really, really like.
Yeah.
But
do they roast their beans too, you think?
They do. Yeah.
In-house? In-house.
They've got a single roasting location.
What's
in
it called
San
again?
Diego. Bird Rock.
Bird Rock Coffee in Coffee. San Diego, Carlsbad.
They've got a location in Carlsbad, but
okay.
They've also got like probably a couple more.
Yeah.
But in the San Diego area.
But I like their coffee.
Right.
And when I'm off-roading, whatever's easy, like...
Did you know that off-roading and coffee go hand in hand?
How
they
so?
Do. Like, this is back to the origin of where our beans come from. A lot of the farmers, like the farms that we get our coffee for Overland Coffee, they use Land Cruisers out there because they're in the coffee belt. It's rainy. It's foresty. They're climbing the hills that are all muddy, and they're 4x4s. They're... In many ways, parallel what we do.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
they don't have Jeeps.
And if they
do, they're not as cool as your Jeep. But they have
some cool stuff. I like all the international vehicles we can't get here.
Yeah.
I think Hiluxes are better than Tacomas.
I would agree.
Personal
Hands
opinion.
Hands down.
No one hate me for that. But
especially if you can get diesel.
They have them in diesels.
Mm-hmm. Proper.
And for years and years and years, they've had them like available from the factory with extended breathers for the diffs and snorkels, and they come a little bit more bare bones, less electronics.
Yeah, we don't need the fancy stuff.
I would be more about necessity there, as opposed to here.
I'd rather have the option here.
I think
sure, where it's like every single vehicle now needs to come with all of these things that, well, a lot of people would like really rather
we're
do.
We're programmed.
Like,
it's we are in our society is programmed to look for every feature.
I don't
we want,
want
what's
feature.
Best and best.
How about just what works? Which is why Toyota hasn't really updated its like nav audio system forever, because the shit that they have will fucking work for the next like 50 years.
Yeah.
You know? That's why they haven't like gone as crazy as all the other manufacturers with all the digital fucking displays and shit.
Still running cassette players.
What's really interesting about Toyota actually is they have a 1 to 8 to something ratio where it's like, for every electric vehicle we create, we could either make 8 plugins or whatever it is, 16
mm-hmm.
hybrids.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've developed this mentality of like, electric's not the future, mm-hmm. hybrids where it's at.
I love that approach. When I heard that, I was like, they get it. I mean, I think the push for electric is too soon. I think it does have a place in the future, but it's straining our grid.
For what we do,
mm-hmm.
I 100% agree.
Right.
I'm not ready for electric, and electric's not ready for me.
Right.
In the places that I go, in the areas that I travel, and the limitations that I expect.
Unless you got a month to charge your battery.
So.
Right.
With solar.
Yeah.
Electric's there for people that live, like, in commute.
It's expensive. Is it
for a commuter?
Uh-huh.
It was great. Like, I had a Fiat 500D.
If you have a predictable journey.
Commuter, it's perfect.
Predictable.
Yeah. Especially if you have charging at home, charging at work.
Charge at home.
Once you add in that factor of like unpredictability that comes along with adventuring and exploring and having open-ended plans,
mm-hmm.
I'd really rather not tailor my plans around
to your charging
range anxiety.
Yeah.
I'd rather just carry extra fuel tanks on my vehicle and have none of that.
Yeah.
Just point to a map dot and go.
Right.
Because I'm going to an area I've never been to before, and I don't know if there's going to be the facilities that I need.
Right.
Well, they did the long way up, Ewan McGregor and his buddy, and they did the Harley Davidson, their adventure bike, and they converted them to electric. And they're like, we're gonna ride all the way up from Mexico or Patagonia to LA or whatever was final destination. I didn't finish the season, but they did this trip, and within that trip, they had 2 of the original Rivians, the prototypes,
mm-hmm.
on that trip as chase vehicles. The Rivians broke down, of course, because they're prototypes.
Mm-hmm.
But they had to charge all their shit with like generators, and the electricity comes from somewhere, guys. Like, it doesn't just magically.
Each
like,
had a generator in their.
We
bed.
Are not solar powered on our electricity. Okay, like so, all that electricity is coming from coal plants.
Yep.
Like fucking.
Yep.
Like,
very few of it's coming from wind. Very little of it.
Few of them's coming from wind, but the majority is coming from like actual polluting. Fucking sources of energy. And this one guy did this like video where he's like, oh, I'm at this fast charging station, it's going at like 100 kilowatt station or 300 kilowatt, whatever the fuck it was.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, this is the amount of energy you could power like x amount of homes with,
right
for their entire needs, and each car is taking that for their full charge.
It's crazy.
Homes worth of electricity.
Right.
For a single vehicle.
The amount of strain on our grid system caused by the electricity charging, the electric car charging infrastructure.
Yeah.
I mean, we're here in California, so not everyone applies to our crazy.
That's true.
Our crazy mentality or infrastructure or the way that our internal state government wants to run things,
right.
But within the same calendar week this last year in 2023, I think it was July, and Gavin Newsom said first there was a mandate on like when all vehicles would need to be electric, like all vehicles
2035 or something.
I think it was like 2030.
Yeah.
And then within the exact same week we had a heat wave where everyone was running their AC systems.
That's right.
And people couldn't charge their cars.
Asked people not to charge their electric vehicles because of the strain on the electric grid.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's 2024. You think you're going to fix the electric grid within the next 6 years where that everyone can charge their vehicle? When, like
ten
you
years.
Said,
even 10 years.
Each think vehicle,
we've
each
learned
vehicle, when it's under those massive charging systems for like the quick charging that everyone wants, like filling up your fuel tank, it should take less than 5 minutes.
Right.
The quick charging that everyone wants is like it takes the amount of electricity to power a home,
homes
for several days.
Yeah.
All in a few minutes.
And if the grids, if they're not charging in the summer because of a heat wave, in the winter they're not running because it's too cold.
Exactly.
It drives me crazy when I see these.
Really? Within the same calendar week,
I don't think
you're going to make a declaration about what is going to be a state law.
Right.
And then point out the absolute obscurity of even saying
parts,
that. Like, it's asinine.
Right, right. It's say one thing, mean something else, or have a different agenda.
Yeah, everyone should be able to afford a Tesla Powerwall.
I saw
save
the
their
thing.
Extra battery.
I saw a billboard. About the Powerwall, a battery. Like, be independent, have a battery. Like, dude, you're not producing enough electricity. Honestly, we have all the panels on our house. We're not producing enough electricity to be at a surplus, let alone a deficit.
You too,
which is where we're at.
How many years have you had your panels?
Like 2 years now.
When you first got them installed, were you at that point where you were producing surplus, or has it been
like
a net?
No, it's always been, we've always been dependent upon the grid.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we're not putting back enough, and whatever we put back is not enough to meet what we ultimately consume.
Right.
It was worse when I had my little 500D electric one-way ticket Fiat.
Uh-huh.
My Fiat was my electric car, it was my commuter car, and I would get to
work.
Was
it a one-way ticket to paradise?
One-way ticket to, like, you had to charge wherever you were going, or else you were not getting back.
It had all of 80 miles of range or something?
80 miles of range, yeah.
That's crazy low.
Yeah, they try to say 110, but it's not. Not if you're actually driving and using the air conditioning or the
heater. You got to go 50 miles an hour, no faster.
Oh, dude, it's so bad. And traffic with your friend with those cars.
110 miles, all downhill.
Yeah.
Yeah, just...
You wanted to be riding the brakes.
Semi.
Yeah, draft semis and ride the brakes because regenerative braking and all that. It didn't work. And my Subaru has been like the best thing ever. I am so grateful for those 20 miles per gallon that I get now on that car. 21.4 on the best days.
Ooh.
What are you getting? What are you getting?
I don't check.
You don't check?
No.
I don't care. It's better than the Jeep.
Way better than the Jeep.
Yeah, I get like 400 miles of tank, so I don't care.
I get
it's a 16-gallon tank.
7.5 miles a gallon in the Jeep right now.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you have quite a bit of work.
The 20 miles per gallon on the Subaru is fucking rad.
That's 20 miles is a nice, I like that number.
Mine's like I get 350 miles on the tank with the way I drive these days. I stopped driving super conservative, and I'm like, I just want to enjoy fucking my car. So I've been driving more just normal.
A little heavy-footed?
A little bit.
That's your normal style.
No, you know, that's good you didn't get a turbo Subaru.
It's not called Slow Friends.
I mean, you want the turbo for fast friends, but your Subaru MPG would be down to like 15, 16.
I would love to do a twin turbo Subaru Crosstrek build.
I still want a manual WRX version of my exact vehicle. Like, I would so stoked on that. Like, I'm stoked
convert
on that
shit over.
Don't get me wrong. I'm stoked on that build. I'm stoked on the way it turned out. It's exactly what I built it for.
I think
it
you need a little bit different valving on your suspension.
But I really would want like another 80 horsepower.
Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure.
And a CVT is a thief of joy.
There's a SoCal shop that built, I think, the first-gen Crosstrek, and they swapped a WRX FA20 into it. So it was a 2-liter turbo engine. And the whole, like, XV on, like, a lot of the Facebook groups and the forums, everyone was like, yeah, Subaru needs to come out with a Crosstrek. They called it, like, a TXV or something.
Uh-huh.
Turbo XV.
Okay.
And it's the perfect size for a turbo. Man, you can rally it through the desert.
Yeah. Yeah, I just feel like it's sad that Subaru dropped their whole, like, WRX program
mm-hmm.
with the wagons. Like,
whatever it was, 8 years ago, whatever it was, that they like stopped doing bitchin' ass wagons and they just started doing these sedans and really watered down Imprezas and Crosstrek. And it's like, fuck.
Well, then now they discontinued the STI.
Give us
the performance program.
Give us
a
fucking motor, dude. Give us give us a bitchin' ass motor.
Why is it that, I mean, don't get me wrong, I love these trucks that I'm going to mention, but why is it that the big American brands are going to, they're releasing Raptors, they're releasing TRXs. Mm-hmm. They're appealing to the off-road community.
Right,
because
that's what they want.
They know, they understand us. I think it would be bitchin' if one of the companies that makes these off-road crossovers that they show on TV, you know, climbing rocks to the top of a mountain. I've seen that so many times from Subaru. Build us something that can rally through the desert. Give us a little bit of your rally history back in today's cars.
Yeah, and I think that's what we've done with our project.
It's about rally history because being involved in like world rallycross, it makes it so if a brand wants to participate, they need to offer something that's like a production vehicle in that class with that motor.
If they want to race that class. If
they want to race in that class, they need to offer something that's production in that class. And, and so there's rules around
it. I believe that word's called homologation.
As soon as you leave rallycross, it's like that whole portion of their even interest in the market seemed to have gone away.
Right.
I mean, I think that's what made Subaru great was their involvement in rally. Yeah. I don't know if it was so much their marketing tactic for the lesbians, but the rally stuff is really where it got me. I don't think
it's made me buy my first Forester.
Yeah, I don't think it was so much the marketing towards the far left. It was more the marketing of race heritage and just pushing your shit to the limit.
Yeah.
And these fucking like legends of rally, like Solberg and all those guys.
Colin McRae.
McRae, just
Ken Block.
Ken Block.
At his beginning, he was a Subaru.
He had the WRX, That thing was a beast with Cobb tuning, I think it was.
And Cobb, the Gymkhana 1.
Yeah.
Was that WRX, that Hawkeye.
It made me fall in love with that shit.
Yep.
Like, straight up. And he did it with the Focus, and it wasn't the same. And then Travis Pastrana came back with Subaru, and I'm like, fuck that's fucking rad.
Jumping the STI, and Travis, he's done a lot with Subaru, and I think that was sort of I feel like that was their last hurrah.
Yeah.
Really, like, I've been out of the rally scene watching like WRC for a bit, but I don't know if they're still competing I don't think the factory team's competing.
No. Yeah.
But I appreciate the brand. I love what they're about, getting the people outdoors at the end of the day, you know.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, me and Eric will hold it down for the Subaru Crosstrek, and there's a couple other guys out there doing like rallycross shit, which is rad. Like local Pacific Northwest rallycross events, which I wish we had down here because I'd totally jump into it.
Have you heard of Glen Helen?
Yeah.
I believe there is a class that competes out there.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
but
Eric, maybe it's something we can go jump into.
I'd kind of be into it.
I'd kind of be into it. Just for fun. Let's go.
One day when you're doing Cleghorn in the cross check, going down the fucking shortcut, just crawl over to Glen Helen and just kind of make your way into the course.
Cruise around there.
Just cruise around there until somebody comes up to you. Then you met somebody there.
Then I met somebody there. Now you have a friend.
You have a friend. Hey, who was it that said there was a weird line going through the sky where the...
Oh, that was Matt.
Look. What's going on, guys?
Oh, yeah. Straight through.
There's another one.
Well, it's the planes. That's what they do.
Yeah, it's the planes.
So, guys, chemtrails. I hope you appreciated this next episode. I mean, honestly, now we're two for two for the reemergence of Rick for Dirt. I can't promise you a third anytime soon, but for now, I hope you enjoyed this. Eric?
Fireside chats with friends. Always good times, guys.
I mean, we're literally by the fire.
Is that the name of this series? Fireside chats with friends?
No, it's just Rick for Dirt. But
it
at the best of times, it is a fireside chat with friends. Yeah, for sure.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. I've been wanting to get you on like as an actual guest for a minute. And I'm glad that I finally forced you to do it, even though you're trying to go to bed.
baby. I'm awake now. Cause
are you? Yeah.
Well, you jogged my brain. I was like, you know what?
Now you're in it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, now I could go. I'm totally down to, if you want to have that talk about where we are in this industry, I think.
Well, I think we kind of had it, but I think, like, you were right. Mike had some thoughts.
Yeah, yeah.
And then our buddy at AV Overland Supply.
Chris, yeah. There's so many perspectives that I think
I'm not trying to bring race, honestly, as much into it as I am trying to bring the fact that there's those of us who are just so lucky that our parents, like, raised us a certain way.
Yeah.
That we got into it, because otherwise, within our respective communities, it's not as big of a thing. Like,
right.
You're supposed to study, become a lawyer, doctor, whatever.
Yep.
That's what a Middle Eastern parent wants for their kid.
Right.
Not necessarily a guy who really makes his passion and love out of being outdoors with friends in these wide open spaces.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yep. That's where it comes in. But I think with more of, like, the traditional Americans, that's how they've been raised.
Right.
And so that's why there's a prevalence of that versus some of the lower represented groups.
Right.
And I know, because the way the groups need to be represented, but I'm just saying they're not. They're just not. There's not, like, a prevalence of Persian fucking overlanders. But yeah, there are some, you know, like, it's cool to see them come out.
Yeah. It's just, it's never been the direction of a lot of cultures. They come to America to succeed in this way, this way, this way, and this way. It's on paper for
them. They have a definition of success that's not aligned with their kid going off
to, off the grid and trying to figure out how to survive one day. And
this is not the life we wanted for you, Ali.
Don't pretend to be homeless. We brought you here for a reason.
You have a home.
I was going to say something along those same lines. Like, I've talked to a lot of my buddies that are, like, from Mexico.
Don't act like you're homeless.
Like, their families came from less than.
Yeah.
And they're what we're working doing. Towards more than.
Right.
Right.
And to go back to, like,
doesn't compute.
Living out of a vehicle or, like, camping in a tent and sleeping outdoors.
We didn't raise a gypsy, Ali.
Yeah. Like, wait, no.
Yeah.
We've worked for generations.
Yeah, we're right by caves.
We've worked for generations to come away from that. Uh-huh. And now it's like, but as, you know.
Right.
If that's your recreation and you don't have to spend time outdoors, it's like, I crave spending time outdoors.
Right.
Like,
right.
I wouldn't want to have to only have that be my reality. But for a lot of people, like, that was the reality.
Yeah.
And so to, like, pretend that, like, it's fun to go be in the wilderness and camp outdoors, it's like, it just doesn't compute.
I mean, that was the greatest thing that I think my dad imparted to me was he grew up going to a local river with his buddies, fishing, like, ditching school, going outdoors, like, that was his release. And so when he was raising me, like, he didn't really give me, like pathfinding fucking skills or, like, you know, how to hunt. But I did learn how to fish a little bit. I haven't been very successful on my own without him. God rest his soul. But he, like, took me to Sequoia almost every year as I was growing up for these, like, week-long trips. And I grew up in, like, Hume Lake. Amazing. And actually the topographic map on my Subaru, and Eric, whether he liked it or not, is of Hume Lake.
Really?
Yeah, because
I definitely asked as soon as the topographical map got laid down. I was like, I need to know what topo this
what is. What topo is.
I cannot be asked by someone, like, what are these topo lines from? Yeah. He's like, Hume Lake, homie. Yeah. I'm like, all right.
Was that good? Noted. Enough? Was that right?
I know the area. I love the area.
Dude, some of the best fishing right there.
Hells yeah. All around that area.
I've actually never been.
German browns and fucking golden rainbow trout. Yeah.
Where is Hume Lake? I've actually, I don't know where it is.
Sequoia trout. Is like, Sequoia is, so Tahoe, coming back down from Tahoe.
Okay.
You're going to go through Sonora, pass through Sonora. You're going to go past Yosemite, and then you're going to end up in Sequoia. And Sequoia is towards the more southern edge of the High Sierras. Is that right? Would you say that's fair? The massive Sequoia trees.
Yeah, I mean, actual, like, Sequoia National Park is there, like, the very southern end.
Southern.
North of Kern.
Okay. So I'm not wrong on the southern side of the Sierras.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but that's, I mean, Sequoia itself.
Hume Lake's
is not
near Sonora where we were at.
Hume Lake is Sequoia, straight up. Mm. And Hume Lake, Sequoia itself is not a vat. Like, it is not super vast.
It's a small area.
It's a small area. And Hume Lake will be one of the central parts of that. Okay. Kings River.
Oh, is, Kings River.
Is the major river. I took Ashley, little tangent real quick. I took Ashley camping to Sequoia for the first time. And I said, honey, don't worry. We don't have to take a lot of food because I'm going to catch all our food. Because when I used to go with my dad,
you set yourself up for success.
We used to pull
right
out
there.
So many trout and bluegills out of that water that we were like, we were full. We were so full that the guts of our fish were bringing the bears in to
wow.
the lake. And my dad didn't give two fucks because he would camp us out on the lake, even though we were not supposed to. But he would just find, he'd like, we're camping here. And we'd be like fishing right there off the water, gutting the fish, cooking the fish on the fire, and then leaving their guts there. And like, I remember waking up once and my dad's like, be quiet. Shut up. I'm like, what?
Uh-oh.
And then you hear the splashing in the water and the bear is just fucking going off on all the guts that we left behind.
Oh.
And my dad's like, be quiet.
How far away from the, do you remember how far away
like
from your tent
feet,
it was? Like 30
feet from the fucking tent.
Like,
yeah.
Brown bear.
And I heard the fucking bear walk by the tent to the water, did his thing, and then walked past. And my dad was like fucking white.
You know what? The bear was probably full, though. I think you guys got
lucky.
He
was good.
He didn't need to sniff the tent or anything else.
No, he didn't care.
Yeah.
He didn't care. And those bears are kind of tame in terms of, not tame, but like they understand like campers. They understand like scavenging.
There's a mutual
they just kind of
understanding, maybe.
Yeah, they just hang around and
yeah.
they come in for the scraps.
We see you humans. We will not bother you if you do not bother us.
Sequoia is a beautiful place. And then the trees, like the big, like, what's that one tree's name? The Great Sherman or some shit? Anyways, there's
the
General Sherman tree, like, just massive, like.
Drive your car
30
through
people
it.
Can, like, hold hands, I guess, around this thing, or 20 or 30 people can hold hands and, like,
right.
go around the circumference of the tree. Pretty cool.
Those things are huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sequoia is a pocket that, you know, do you find yourself, I find like, given that, you know, I and other people in this community seek more off-road related vehicles to go off-roading and off the beaten path.
Yeah.
Do you still make it a point to visit the U.S. staples, the national parks?
Absolutely.
The, you know,
dude, fucking Joshua Tree. I love getting a spot in Joshua Tree where I have to park my car in my parking space and then go set up my camp. And enjoy like Jumbo Rocks, like fucking amazing.
That's good.
Like Yosemite National Park.
Yeah,
I'll do it. Mount Zion. I'll do it.
Right.
Like, I don't give a fuck. Like,
right.
I'm not like, oh, I got to take my car and be able to overland there. Fuck that.
You
got to
do Black Bear Pass.
No, just go enjoy like these beautiful, beautiful places that
right.
they've like kept. Right. Like.
100%. Mm-hmm. 100% agree. Like, you don't need...
They protected it for a reason.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the, like, jewels of this fucking country.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think everyone should go to National... Like, so I'm building a 71 Suburban. I call it a 71. It's like a 70, 72, like, kind of Frankenstein mishmash.
Nice.
4x4 Suburban, 3-door.
Okay.
And my goal is to get that thing running and be our National Parks tour car.
Oh, that'll be so. It's got it'll have a story of its own.
Yeah,
in a way.
Like, and I'm building it with the boys. Like, the only people touching
it's
it
gonna
are
be
me
cool.
And the, me and the boys. Matt's offered to help. Eric's out, like, no, like, it's just straight up family only.
Yeah,
and my goal is to like go to.
Where can
Sequoia.
We follow this journey?
You're not right now. Like, I am filming my kids
share
doing
it all. Come on,
but yeah, not right now. For now,
in
it's like
time.
Every so often you'll get a post of the Suburban or the Jeep. Right? The burden. The family burden.
The
family burden. Matt actually dubbed it the burden. It was by accident. It was in a text. Autocorrect took the bourbon and made it the burden. And it stuck.
Autocorrect was totally correct.
Totally correct. Spot on. The series is called The Family Burden.
It didn't actually correct.
I've actually edited 3 episodes so far. Of me and the kids working on this thing from
okay.
like breaking it down to like finishing the frame.
Okay.
So yeah, we've got a little something coming, but
overall,
save it up, pitch it to Netflix. Bam, yeah, right. And start season one.
But the kids are learning how to use power tools. They're learning how to like use sawzalls and impacts and
that's
and,
really good knowledge. You know, yeah,
drivers and it's just it's removing that fear of what those tools are or what it takes. Like they're learning firsthand. Like, oh yeah, we could take this thing apart and slowly put it back together whenever dad's got time. Mm-hmm. You know. But we got a motor for it. We've got a transmission. I believe it works. The transfer case seems like in good shape. Like, I'm going to get J.E. Real to cut me up some like proper drive shafts for it. I'm going to redo the whole brake system. And I'm just going to get it running. And once it's running, I'll probably take it to Mexico, get some body work done because it needs some sorely needed body work. And then, you know, do our inside renovation of like, lower level bed, kitchen area, upper level pop-up tent. And so Ashley and the kids can sleep up top. I can be at the bottom.
That'd be nice.
Yeah. And there's plenty of room for it. So
to do roof conversion.
Yeah. So cut through the roof.
Pass through.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I want. And so I'm going to figure all that out. But first things first, get it running, get it going. But yeah, national parks, dude, there's no substitute for what this country is already identified as like some of the most beautiful places. However, I will say areas like Calico, like we're at right now, do have their unique characteristics that like you may not think of as you drive. Like we could literally see the 15 freeway from where we're sitting here.
Right.
And you could see the cars driving on it. And normally this would not be a place that people would be like, oh yeah, I overlanded at this really cool spot. Like, literally, we can see lights. But with that said, there is so much rad shit in this area and so much history that you could truly have a good time.
It's part of California's gold.
Yeah.
You guys like remember that? Those two worlds together?
Fucking, yeah.
You remember a guy named Huelhauser?
Yeah, yeah. That's amazing.
That's amazing.
That's amazing.
Here in California's gold. He is the guy that...
Frank, I wish Frank was here. Honestly, Frank wanted to come and he couldn't make it, but
oh, man.
Frank loved that guy. We had an episode where we talked about him.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
I feel like people who study him, like, I'm sure there's plenty of things you can find, videos of just everything he's covered. Those are the hidden gems that you almost want to take the
trail.
The person
who gets it the best is Brad from Trail Recon.
Yeah.
Gets that Huelhauser, but like less autistic.
yeah, that's true. That's true. Brad, he brings the family element into it, and he really has, tells their own story. And I love Huelhauser's content. I mean, rest in peace. He was the origin, really. His style of discovering California was just
different. I mean, that's why I like Rick for Dirt.
Yep.
At its best, we are usually on location and somewhere cool that you should be at. At its worst, we're just filling in some episodes in the garage, but even then, hopefully we're giving you guys something to like pass some time with. You know, just kind of stay connected. And it keeps me connected, and I really enjoy being able to hang out with friends around the fire and having good conversation and just being part of this beautiful, fucking awesome industry that we get the luxury of being part of in this country.
Yeah.
And for me, that's...
We have it good. We have it good.
Yeah. That's what it's all about, is being able to live your piece of happiness, whatever that is.
Right. And
we have that opportunity.
Find your corner.
Anyways, guys, I hope you enjoyed this episode of Rig for Dirt. Eric, thanks for being with us here.
Good to be back. Good to be out in the desert with you guys.
Yeah, bud. Jimmy, thanks for joining us.
Yes, thanks for having me. Welcome back. I can't wait to hear more.
Yeah, man. I mean, we're going to try to bring some more consistency to this, but no promises. Life is full of obstacles, but we get through them. I would like to say thanks to partners that have allowed me to really enjoy this world, which is like Torco, Milestar. And then, of course, if you guys want to check something out that is more about our industry and who we are and what we're about, check out fastfriends.fun. It is a little near and dear part of just what I like to do. And
the mentality of what I like to bring to what I do. All right, guys. Thank you. Drive safe. More to come.